Hello, and welcome to episode number 89 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Without question, 2023 has been a banner year in the decades-long endeavor to bring disclosure about the reality of the so-called UFO phenomenon to public awareness. Ever since the mid-20th century, there has been a dedicated push by a relatively small but growing contingent of diehards to finally get the U.S. government to admit what it knows about these beings from elsewhere. Beings who have apparently been at work in our civilization in very substantive, albeit clandestine ways. Based on the political machinations that began churning soon after the dawn of the startling allegations brought forward by a former insider named David Grush, that push seemed to finally be paying dividends. That said, of late, the startling progress seen earlier in the summer seems to have slowed, so much so, in fact, that some have begun to wonder aloud, with chagrin, if perhaps the historic secrecy-slash-disinformation machine, which has been pushing back in its own dedicated way ever since these revelations came to light, might once again be about to turn this apparently irreversible progress into yet another mirage. While on the one hand, such a feat seems more like wizardry, after all, how could these revelations not at the very least lead to a deep and broad congressional investigation? It does indeed seem as if our society is carrying on with the same old, in regards to what tends to garner public attention. Now that we're just over a year away from a hotly contested federal election, perhaps not surprisingly, the vast majority of public and media focus has turned to that epic showdown, one being seeded by near Civil War-like stratifications within the national fabric. The question now arising is this: can this push for disclosure hope to gain enough steam and make enough noise to be heard amongst this rising national clamor leading up to an historic moment in late 2024? At least that's the question some are asking, chiefly those concerned this might all come down to a monumental run of bad luck around timing. From another point of view, however, one that I personally think is more robustly informed by the full scope of the matters in play here, these issues are not separable and certainly not coincidental. I would argue that the what, when, and how of these matters again comes down, at least in part, to the clandestine actions of these mysterious actors, ones who seem to be both everywhere and every when, except for when you expressly go looking for them. Is this seeming overarching orchestration humbling to our collective sense of agency, and even to our species' perspective on planetary sovereignty? Certainly. Does it suggest that disclosure, however one defines that term, simply isn't something that humanity alone can muster up enough momentum to bring to bear, at least not at our current stage of development? Yes, without question. I think history makes this matter crystal clear. Truth be told, I would argue that it is only by opening the aperture to its widest setting possible, and by taking the proverbial 30,000-foot view, that we have any hope of wrapping our understanding around the sheer scope and scale of this civilization-shaping and civilization-shaking topic. For these intelligences are not new on the block, nor are they merely visiting tourists from a neighboring star system. Rather, they are the very puppet masters who have shaped the very course and perhaps even origin of our species. With that perspective in mind, one realizes it is almost preposterous to talk about disclosure happening now or later without the express intent or at the very least the acquiescence of these archetypal archons. Questions we should be asking include the following: what do they want in the midst of all of this? What is their overarching agenda? Is it singular or plural? Are they singular or plural? If they've shaped our history to one degree or another, what do they intend for our future? And what role are they playing as the figures on the chessboard seemingly move about of their own volition? Considering the subject of disclosure from this much more panoptic vantage point is exactly the approach we will be taking in this particular discussion, as we aim to make sense of these intriguing yet imposing matters in this, the 89th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's episode, I'd just like to remind everyone that if you'd like to get access to all my content, which includes not just Point of Convergence and Liminal Frames, but also the feature series I create, as well as OTC Squared, then you can do so by becoming a patron on Patreon or by becoming a subscriber on Spotify. Those options also give you access to my private Discord server, where the community discusses various topics related to this overarching subject matter. All right, into today's episode. This is going to be a metaphysical meandering of the highest sort. We're going to be considering the implications and larger context regarding the other intelligences in our midst, as we explore how this topic impacts our conceptions of things like human origins, development, and destiny. Because absolutely, these others are wrapped up tightly within those questions. And again, this is why disclosure is so much more complicated, complex, and consequential than is being considered by the public right now. Now, what's in play here? Really, we're talking about disclosure that involves a reality rewrite. That's the way I describe it, because the tendrils go everywhere. As I've said many times before, this is the one topic that leaves no other topic unscathed. That's what I mean by a reality rewrite. Our very understanding of what it means to be human, our very understanding of what reality consists of, changes because of this topic. And the deeper you go, the further these tendrils extend. Now, speaking of just how far-reaching this matter is, I'm very thankful to David Grush, not just because he's the person that's taken the disclosure push to an entirely new level, but because he's to some degree normalized the discussion of these really complex and challenging matters, because he's not just bringing forward the notion that the U.S. government knows about UFOs, perhaps even not just that they've recovered some UFOs, but he's also mentioned that bodies have been found, the pilots themselves, and he's talked about accords that have been made between these various groups and the human governments of the world, and even within the military-industrial complex. This takes the matter to a very different place, because again, it's one thing if people are having these conversations in back rooms within ufology, but when this is testimony being given before Congress, and even the discussions he's had around this matter outside of those discussions in front of Congress, it helps to normalize this, as I say, so that we can begin to talk about these matters, even the nuances of them, in polite society, so to speak. Because again, this goes very, very deep, and it's very, very broad. It goes back to the very beginnings of our species, I would argue. This is what's in play here. This is why one could argue that there are reasons why even those within the secret-keeping establishment, the gatekeeper, so to speak, have had at least good reason to think about how to roll this out, because the implications are so consequential. And speaking of these revelations that have been included in the allegations brought forward by David Grush, again, I want to bring up the matter of accords that have been made between different government groups and these others. The reason why I want to bring that up is because, again, what I find sometimes, even on social media, when I'm discussing these things, some people seem to believe that the notion that humans can actually communicate with these others is preposterous, outlandish, unthinkable even. And yet that's exactly what David Grush is saying. You can't have accords if you don't have communication. And yes, sometimes that even means sit-downs, face-to-face communication. Sometimes it's through other means as well, telepathic and whatnot. But the point I want to really hammer home here, especially for some of you perhaps new to this podcast, we're coming from more of a nuts and bolts kind of perspective. This is in play. Human beings are in contact and communication with these groups of others. Not everyone, not even most people, at least not consciously. But there are people who are talking with these others, communicating with them, getting information from them. So I bring that up to point out that it's not a complete wild card, a guessing game in terms of what the agendas of these others are. Some people are hearing from these others directly. Experiencers, of course, are front and center here, who've had contact and ongoing communication with these others. Now, I bring that up to say that part of the intel I bring to the table when I talk about these things includes communication with some of these others amongst my circle of friends and colleagues. I'll say it again, just in case you didn't quite get it the first time. Amongst my circle, there is communication with different groups of non-human or non-conventionally human intelligence, and information is provided when we ask questions. This allows for some semblance of sorting out what's going on here, what's really in play, what is the ultimate game plan. Again, I understand some people are going to say, how do you know you can trust these beings? How do you know they're not just duping you as part of some deception, some vast deception? Again, religious people might say some sort of satanic deception. And to that, I would just say, how do you know that anyone you're talking to is someone you can trust? Because you build up relationship. You build up this felt sense of energetic resonance with that being. That's what happens here as well. And this is also tied into the matter of hybrids, star seeds, that kind of thing as well, which again, I know some people coming from the nuts and bolts perspective are going to find hard to fathom, hard to stomach. And yet that is very much in play here as well. All of this is in play. These things that have been part of the backroom lore are front and center in this conversation. How could they not be? So again, that's why I'm thankful to David Grush, because he's helped to normalize this, to establish as part of the conversation we need to be having. So I bring that to your mind just so you know that when we have this conversation today, it's not just a guessing game. Is some of it supposition? Absolutely. Some of it's putting together different elements of truth that come from different sources, which is something I always try to do. Some being ex-government sources, insider sources, experiencer sources, as well as conversations with these others themselves. All of this is in play in trying to make sense of the largest scope of what's going on in our reality as we speak. I also want to point out that when I consider the different sources of information that I rely on in trying to make sense of what's going on, what I find is a remarkable degree of overlap and corroboration between these different sources. That can include things like channeled material, direct downloads for myself and others that I trust, conversation again with these different groups of others, as well as ancient spiritual traditions that also lend their knowledge, their wisdom to this discussion. And again, any of those things alone, you might say, how do I know to trust this? Fair enough. What's interesting though is when you find this overlap, again, this corroboration between these different sources, suggesting that to some degree, the truth is staring us in the face and always has been. And a major element of that truth has to do with the metaphysical reality that undergirds what we perceive as physical reality, the physical world. This is where this inevitably leads. You cannot have this conversation about UFOs and supposed aliens without also asking deeper questions about the metaphysical nature of reality. Now, here's the thing. The more you're tethered to the assumptions of physicalism, which is still the dominant viewpoint in society and academia, the more these matters will be difficult for you to take seriously, let alone to integrate. And yet that is the journey in front of you, I would suggest. Now, in a previous episode of Liminal Frames, I distinguished two different kinds of truth. Truth as it is in its fullness, as much as we can make sense of anyway, and the truth that can be metabolized at any given time by the culture at large. Right now, those are two different questions, because what this involves, the depth to which it goes, is a very different matter than what our society is prepared to metabolize, prepared to really integrate, prepared to ground into our shared sense of being. Speaking of that, a few minutes ago, I mentioned how physicalism is still the dominant paradigm, both in the general public and in academia, especially in academia. But the thing is, that also needs to change. I would argue that where my journey has led me in this process is to understand that something more like idealism is a better description of the underlying reality construct that we're a part of than is physicalism. And there is a growing group of people who see this, who see the writing on the wall, that not only is physicalism unlikely as a base reality model, but it's actually fully untenable. But just like the revelations of the quantum mechanic experiments that happened 100 years ago, It's taking some time for this to work its way through academia, through the mainstream, and really lead to the possibility of a culture-wide sea change. That said, that sea change is coming. It's really just a matter of time. And to that point, Bernardo Castro, a philosopher that's been a big influence on me and who has spearheaded a branch of philosophy known as analytic idealism, recently tweeted the following. He said, quote, "Within the next 20 years, perhaps sooner, we will witness three tightly interrelated, gigantic revolutions in our understanding of reality. Number one, the official recognition of the presence and role of non-human intelligence, NHI, throughout our history. Number two, the rejection of physicalism and embracement of idealism as the only plausible metaphysics. Three, a new understanding of the nature of time that will revolutionize the ontological status of past and future, as well as our understanding of the meaning of birth and death. Number three, concurrently, these same 20 years will be the most dangerous in human history when we will have to survive the highest risk of civilization collapse since the end of the Roman Empire, due to a coalescence of simultaneous environmental and geopolitical threats." Unquote. Now, to this notion again of reality really being more like a mental kind of construct, this is another quote I posted to social media this week. Quote, "The universe begins to look like a great thought rather than a great machine. Mind no longer appears like an accidental intruder into the realm of matter, but as the creator and governor of the realm of matter." Unquote. And that was by Sir James Jeans, a British physicist and astronomer, written a long time ago in the 20th century. But again, even then he was seeing this. These notions have been around, but it's taking a while to work their way into the mainstream because, again, the dominant paradigm has so much sway. It is the assumed truth. And when that's the case, it takes a long time, even for data that basically undermines that paradigm, to really rise to the surface. Now, just thinking back to what Bernardo Castro said there when I quoted him, he touched on three things that I've been talking a lot about in the last months, even going back into a year or more. And that is the underpinning nature of reality, again, idealism rather than physicalism, or something like idealism. The nature of time. Again, we've been talking about that a lot, almost every episode, because it is central. I guarantee you it is central. I've been thinking a lot about this. We've been asking questions of our sources, including NHI or NCHI, to try to make sense of that. And the fact that I call them NCHI, which is non-conventionally human intelligence, is because of the time issue, some of them are us to some degree. On the one hand, it's from their relative future compared to us, but on the other hand, they make very, very clear that time does not exist like we think it does. It's not really sequential. Everything happens at the same time. So got to keep that in mind too. Lastly, he talked about, Bernardo Castro, how life and death are impacted by this as well. Absolutely. This is the thing. This is how far disclosure goes. Changes the nature of reality, changes the nature of time, changes our understanding of life and death. All of these things are in play. Of course, our origins also come into that as well. Now, so with all that in mind, how should we think about this question around disclosure? Because again, this is so much more involved than the notion of UFOs in the sky, perhaps being piloted by beings from Alpha Centauri or Zeta Reticuli. This is much more complex than that. Even the fabric of space-time is in question here. That is part of the manipulation in play, not just that they can manipulate space-time, but space-time itself being the construct with which they set the stage for us, putting before us what appears like a physical world. Again, when you really dive deeply and do your inner work, you begin to understand, not just based on the data, but even an internal exploration, that that is not ultimately the nature of reality. Again, what's fascinating is in ancient spiritual traditions, specifically Eastern traditions, there was this understanding that underlyingly, original mind is all there is. Everything is consciousness. Again, here we touch on Donald Hoffman and his work. All of this overlap happens because this all points to what's really going on. The actual nature of reality and with that in mind, how these others are interacting with us. I also want to quickly point out here, because I use that word manipulation, that I do not mean by that that this involves necessarily nefarious, malevolent intent. Again, some of these beings are beyond us. Some of these beings have been involved either with the seeding of our civilization, we'll get into that, but also the development, the cultivating of our civilization, the augmentation of our civilization as we've moved from apes into modern humans. That being the case, again, that changes how we think about this term manipulation. They really are more like the archons behind the entire construct. That does not necessarily imply negative intent, not at all. It just helps give context to where we really sit within this larger metacosmic scope. So let's consider then, with that in mind, this apparent slowdown recently when it comes to the movement towards disclosure, or at least confirmation. This is the issue I first want to bring to your attention regarding this matter of disclosure. Let me pose it in the form of a question. How can you expose these matters without completely taking the lid off the Pandora's box, the proverbial Pandora's box? What I mean by that is because this is so consequential and stretches everywhere, how can you begin to expose some of it without prompting the very questions that will expose more of it? And with that in mind, the second question to ask you is, do you think our society, our civilization, is prepared for that level of a conversation? And I don't want you to just have that knee-jerk reaction of saying, yes, we deserve the truth. And I'm not going to give the knee-jerk reaction of saying, you can't handle the truth. It's not that simple. But at least, if nothing else, it's worth considering how complex this is. Because questions around the stability of our society do come into play here. Now, I know I have been one of the people who said before, our civilization needs a shakeup, and indeed that is true. But at the same time, there is this recognition that some kinds of truths can do more harm than good, especially at certain levels of consciousness development. That's the question we need to be asking ourselves is, based on the center of gravity of consciousness on the planet right now, is humankind ready for these revelations? What would it do? Would it really make things better? And I say that knowing that there are many things that are not great right now, things that should be improved, things that are woefully misguided about the nature of a civilization. And yet that's part of what happens when you have the evolution of consciousness. You have a messy kind of process. It's just baked into what evolution involves. And to that point, I would like to remind you of something I've said several times on different podcasts. And this addresses the question that people pose about why wouldn't these others want to help us? Why wouldn't they want to step in and solve these daunting challenges we face? Well, the main reason being that this is about the evolution of consciousness. That's the primary reason we're here, individually and as a collective. Indeed, that the entire construct that we call space-time is only there as the stage for which the drama of the evolution of consciousness can take place. For them to step in and solve all our problems without allowing us to mature into a place where we solve them is to defy the main purpose of why we're here, why any manifestation takes place. Again, here we see the common ground, the overlap between ancient spiritual traditions and the wisdom taught there, as well as what some of these others are telling us. This is what we need to think about when we really consider these matters. And to that point, another one of the data points or discussion points that has been brought up by people like David Grush and others, and has certainly been part of the lore in terms of what is discussed within ufology, involves this notion of revolutionary energy production. Things like zero-point energy, where you pull energy from the vacuum, and it's basically this endless source. And if we could do that in a safe, reliable way, we could solve all of our energy problems, which would, of course, solve problems like climate change or get us a long way towards solving that problem, and also help bridge some of the inequalities in the world. This is all true. Nevertheless, the problem is, again, you can't introduce something like that as a positive possibility without considering the negative implications of that same technology. To that point, this is something I posted to social media this week. Quote, some people aren't going to like this because of its transformational potential. but some forms of revolutionary energy generation are extremely dangerous to a civilization such as ours, working at such a relatively low collective center of gravity of consciousness. The ability to collapse space-time makes nuclear energy look like child's play." Unquote. Now, I want to make the point to you, because sometimes I don't make this point directly, but in this case I will, that this warning came from one of these others, came from what you would consider a gray alien, said this to my circle, said that this is too dangerous for us to be playing with right now. So take that for what it's worth. Some of you will not be able to believe that. Some of you will find it a stretch to believe it, but this is the case. And again, I just want to place before your understanding here a reminder that David Grush talks about accords between human governments, the military-industrial complex, and various groups of these others. Why would they not also be talking to people outside of those circles? Of course they are. They are trying to help us consider the implications of some of these revelations. And again, I want to point out, not all of them are working in our best interest. We have a broad assortment of others coming from different points along what we perceive as the linear trajectory of space-time. But again, it's more complex than that. My point being that, again, there are different ones. I'm not saying you should trust all of them. It's really essential that you actually learn to trust energy, trust your reading of energy, because so much of this comes down to energy reading, again, because reality is actually mental. It's a mental construct. It's consciousness. There is no physical reality underpinning consciousness. It's the other way around. What appears like physicality is actually just a stirring of that consciousness energy. The stirring of the water and the water are one and the same. That's what's going on here. So again, just to make this point, I'm not saying we can trust all of them. You shouldn't. You should apply the same discernment you apply when someone shows up at your front door that you haven't met before. But some of them we can. And interestingly, the further you go out, I have found, in terms of what we perceive as linear time, the more transcendent these beings are, the more they are acting in the greatest good. And they are the ones that are trying to help us really consider the fullness of our actions. But again, in such a way that they don't solve the problems for us any more than you would want to do that for your child when they're in kindergarten or first grade. These are the matters to consider when you really dive deep into the consequences of a matter like disclosure, especially knowing that some of the Pandora's box elements that come out when you begin to take off that lid include things like revolutionary energy production that could be weaponized in such a way that it could collapse space-time as we understand it. This is literally the warning being given by some of these others, suggesting we are not ready to develop this yet. And these are ones wanting to help us, but recognizing that at this point, based on our current center of gravity of consciousness, it would do more harm than good. Take that as you will, but again, I'm just passing on to you what is being said. And based on our history, it's not a stretch to understand how that could be the case. They actually talk about nuclear energy partly being something they helped seed into the 20th century understanding, that they thought this could actually help us solve some of the problems that were coming down the pipe in terms of climate change and things like that. And yet, look at what we did with nuclear technology. Think about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Think about how more and more nation states around the world are developing nuclear technology, nuclear weapons, even nation states that have at their helm people working from a very low center of consciousness, which of course is not to say that at times that's also been the case for instance, American administrations. That's the point. When you have the center of gravity of consciousness at the level it is, when you have a civilization that tends to elect people based on the lowest common denominator, so you do not have the best of the best leading us, then you really have to consider, is it safe? Is it in the best interest, as bad as some things are, to really bring those things online at this point? Now, before we jump into the next segment of this episode, I just want to make a point about the gray I mentioned earlier who shared some of this information. I want to make the point that this being that we perceive as a gray, which according to our lore is an alien, perhaps a space alien, or if nothing else, an interdimensional, I just want to bring to your attention that this being has said that it is indeed a future human, that that is a true understanding of the nature of their origin. Though again, with the caveat in place that time does not work like we think it does, and to some degree, everything happens simultaneously. These different influences, even what we would perceive as dimensions or timelines, impact each other, flow back and forth, cresting and falling, interference patterns, all of that is in play here. But from a certain perspective, they are indeed our future descendants, and now have come back to actually change the course of history. And again, interestingly, there's nothing paradoxical or illogical about those notions. Again, it's only our common conventions, our common sense thinking, so to speak, that tends to assume those kinds of things. According to the way this actually works, there is no paradox, there is no contradiction. And it's that very understanding that there is this overarching control structure around us being handled by these beings, in addition to the fact that there's this interference pattern-like interplay going on between different planes, that led me to say the following on social media this week, quote, "A cosmic scale Truman Show, but with fractal feedback loops." Now I'd like to move on to the next segment, in which we're going to discuss human origins and how that relates to notions like evolution and notions like religion. This is what has been said by some of these others. The notion is that there was actually a seeding of multiple planets by some sort of cosmic intelligence in distant, distant history. But in addition to that, there's this notion that you have kind of a Chinese boxes kind of way of delivering reality constructs. What I mean by that is that there's this understanding that to an evolving species, certain revelations would come online and look a certain way at certain points in their history, in their development. And I would suggest to you that even the notion of evolution is the way that things are supposed to look to a species at our level of development. It's more complex than that, though. Again, this is where you have the Chinese boxes kind of notion, because there's actually been augmentation along the way. So you first had that initial seeding by some sort of cosmic intelligence in distant, distant history on different planets, actually. But that in addition to that, you also have augmentation that's been happening all along the way. And again, what's really a mind cramp is that you have to think about the fact that, again, future humans are also going back and tweaking their ancestors. That's part of what's in play there, going right back to the beginning. So this is how complex this gets and how it gets very convoluted in terms of trying to understand origin points when you have time not functioning the way we think it does. I also want to remind you again that the nature of the partition in play involves space-time itself, that these others, many of them, are not working within the space-time construct. It's not just that they can manipulate it in better ways than we can, more advantageous ways, via more advanced technology, but the very reality construct they exist within is not space-time. They can be here. They can appear here when they need to. They can appear as 3D, be as 3D as we are, but that's not their usual mode, and they're certainly not limited to that. Now, a couple of minutes ago, I mentioned how there's been this augmentation along the way, that we were originally apes that have been augmented via genetic manipulation, although again, it's more complex than that. The genetic superstructure is how this manifests, how it appears within physical reality. It's more complex than that, but nevertheless, they have tweaked us, so to speak, along the way. And that's why we have such an unusual history compared to other mammals on the planet. I just wanted to point out that while some people don't like this notion and they think it's kind of a God of the gaps kind of argument, merely inserted to make sense of things that we don't yet understand, that we will one day understand through normal scientific investigation, this is what Bruce Fenton, who's a specialist in human history, said about these matters. Quote, "I often see people claim that alien intervention in human evolution is a hypothesis based on God of the gaps type thinking. Let's just be very clear here, though. If there were not both enormous gaps in the conventional models, along with profound inconsistency noted between our origins and those of other mammals, no researcher would be invoking something as wild-sounding as alien intervention. Simply saying that maybe there is an unknown mysterious solution that we will discover in a few decades is not superior to exploring the alien hypothesis. Indeed, to take that position is to admit that scientism, dogma, and faith are the accepted standard, rather than open-minded scientific investigation. When you explain the observed evidence better than us, we will shut our mouths and walk away. Until then, ours is the path of scientific investigation and yours merely respecting the articles of your faith, unquote. I think that's an excellent point. Scientism does exist. Whenever you have the dominant paradigm, again, you have that assumed nature of truth teller. And again, sometimes that leads to some very strange conclusions when actually the data, as it appears, is pointing in other directions. That's Bruce's point here, and I agree with him wholeheartedly here. Now, speaking of history and how intervention by these others is littered throughout our history, I also want to bring up how their intervention, their actions, are recorded, even if imperfectly or only partially, in religious history and religious lore. Again, there are memories of resets recorded across various faiths across the world, sometimes with remarkable overlap in terms of the nature of those resets, things like floods, sort of planetary calamities that lead to a resetting of the human population. Now, again, there's a couple of different ways you can look at that. Traditional religious believers will say, well, that was God that did that because human beings were acting improperly. On the other hand, you might have scientific rationalists who would say that's merely just the earth going through its usual purely natural meanderings, and as such, sometimes that involves the destruction of certain human civilizations, if indeed those resets happened at all. Most of the time, science does not acknowledge that they did, at least not on a broad scale. And that's because science basically has this assumption that we are the first sophisticated civilization to walk the planet. Again, I think there's evidence in the archaeological, anthropological history that would question that. There are people that are outsiders, rogue agents, if you will, who really question that narrative. And I think when you look closely, you find at the very least that some of this just seems to be articles of faith, that there's this assumption that we are the only sophisticated civilization to have ever populated the planet. Again, at the very least, we just can't prove that either way. So to hold to that with such faith, again, I think that's the right word, is at the very least not very scientific. Now, if we assume for a second that these resets have happened on occasion, at least once in human history, if not more than that, again, some people think of capricious gods when this is the case, that someone just did something wrong, some sort of ritual in the wrong way, and that caused the wrath of the gods. I think that's the wrong way to look at it. Again, according to some of the intel that's come from some of these sources, the notion is when there has been a reset necessary, it's only because a certain civilization had both reached a technological level that they were very dangerous, and they were acting in ways that were very dangerous and out of tune with the best interest of the overarching environment. So I think that adds some additional contextual information that's really important to think about. Again, we think about the level we are reaching, the point in history we are reaching where we have such a catastrophic capacity to destroy ourselves and the surrounding biosphere while not showing real evidence of an equivalent advancement in consciousness. That makes us very dangerous. That in some ways makes us very similar to supposedly, again, according to this information, previous civilizations who were reset. By the way, another piece of information that's come down regarding this is that in those previous iterations, there was sort of a hands-off approach, and that didn't end well. So when, in our case, there's this same kind of trajectory noticed, what they've done differently this time is to allow for some intervention, some greater levels of intervention, so as to increase the likelihood that we would end up on a better trajectory and not suffer the same consequence as a previous civilization. Again, take that as you will. I'm just passing on the information that's come to me. And again, what's interesting is we do see overlap between different channel material, different religious traditions even, that talk about these kinds of things. One of them being, for instance, this notion of a new heavens and a new earth. Again, once we understand that everything is consciousness-based and a mental construct, then those take on different connotations. But in both channeled material, religious traditions, and information more recently coming from some of these others, there is this sense that at some point, the earth does go through a kind of transformation, a dimensional transformation. And indeed that that's already happening, according to some accounts, already has happened. Sometimes you hear about this talked about in terms of going from 3D to 4D or 4D to 5D or an old earth and a new earth. I think all of these are pointing to the same kind of dynamic, and the degree of overlap, I would suggest to you, points to something real, points to an actual metaphysical reality, again, that underpins what we perceive as physical reality, and it's happening right now. Indeed, I think the thinning of the veil that many people are speaking to, many, many experiencers are sensing this and have been sensing this for some time. I think this perhaps speaks to the nature of the construct itself changing, evolving, if you will, from sort of one configuration to another. I think that's what this all may be pointing to. And again, to be clear, I'm not asking you to accept that as gospel truth. Take it as you will. Consider it with your own discernment. But again, I just want to point you to all of the elements of data that we're referring to here, all of the elements of data that I think we need to try to make sense of in forming an overarching narrative about the nature of reality and the time we find ourselves in as we speak. And now, as we draw this episode to a close, I'd just like to leave you with a few concluding thoughts. Number one, again, the evidence is mounting outside of the UFO phenomenon altogether that consciousness is primary, that we live in a mental construct. Even what we perceive as physical reality is really just a stirring of the water being source consciousness. In that sense, the ultimate audience is one. The ultimate actor is one. Both are the same. This is also, of course, revealed in ancient spiritual traditions, again, especially ancient Eastern spiritual traditions. Some of our oldest traditions speak to this. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because if this is the nature of reality, and you had people really delving into these insightful depths through techniques like meditation, it's not surprising that they would find these things there, because this is the underpinning nature of reality. Ironically, it's only in the pursuit of understanding the physical world as it was conceived of in physicalism that we ended up with the revelations of quantum mechanics that actually suggested that underlyingly all these physical things seem to be merely manifestations of energy. And what is energy ultimately other than consciousness? Now, when you do bring in the UFO phenomenon, one thing that's interesting is that these others have said the same thing. They say things like, it is consciousness that generates the interdimensional quantum coherence necessary for reality to manifest as it does. They also point out, as is also evidenced in ancient spiritual traditions, that the goal is to move towards source consciousness, to reunite with source consciousness, but only once all the permutations of possible manifestations are explored. And indeed, not only does source do that, but source does that in different fractal levels. And indeed, these others are none other than source itself, an expression of that source, like a leaf on a tree, exploring all the permutations of reality, even if that means the seeding or the augmentation of us. But let us not forget that we too are source, are fragments of that same source consciousness. That is all that really exists. And with that in mind, if we could really integrate that understanding, live from that understanding, what a different world we would have. We would suddenly find that all of our problems just go away. Because as I pointed out in other contexts, really all of our problems are not technological, they're not political, they're actually based in consciousness. When you have an evolution of consciousness to a higher stage, all of these problems solve themselves, because the natural ingenuity, innovation of source consciousness itself expressed through us rises to the challenge. It is only when distortion exists and a misapprehension of the nature of reality and our relationship to it that these problems arise. And again, from the perspective of these others that are perhaps, some of them anyway, further along the path, so to speak, it is better to let us solve that ourselves, figure it out for ourselves, because that would involve, it would necessitate this evolution of consciousness to get there. Because at the end of the day, that is what is most essential to this entire enterprise, which again is about a stage being set for nothing other than the evolution of consciousness, which is also the playful exploration in all the mess that is, as Jeff Salzman likes to say, not pretty, but beautiful. This is what's in play ultimately, not just with the UFO phenomenon, but in terms of the nature of reality, the nature of what it means to explore reality as a conscious agent that at the end of the day is nothing other than a manifestation of the stirring of water, whose ultimate identity is nothing other than the ocean. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.